Today is Tuesday, August 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, a rocket attack in Kabul, Afghanistan disrupts the Eid al-Adha festival. The United States deports the last Nazi war criminal suspect from New York City.
Are you scared about where you're headed next, sir? Got any regrets? Anything you'd like to say?
Plus, Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull survives a leadership challenge. Saudi Arabia's health minister says the kingdom is ready for this year's Hajj. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. A barrage of rockets hit Kabul, Afghanistan, Tuesday morning. The attack took place just as President Ashraf Ghani was live on television delivering his address for the Muslim Holy Festival of Eid al-Adha. VOA's Aisha Tanzim is in Islamabad and joins us on the phone. Aisha, what do we know about the attack?
Yes, what we know is that Tuesday morning, as celebrations were going on for the Eid festival that Afghanistan is celebrating today, several rockets were fired in various parts of Kabul. What Kabul police has told us was that several attackers, we've heard the number range from 2 to 5, were hiding behind the Eidgah Mosque, and from there they were firing into various parts of Kabul. Initially, it was thought that one or two rockets landed near the presidential palace. However, later in the day, that was not confirmed by General Murad Ali Murad, who is the garrison commander in Kabul. What we also know is that nobody died in these attacks, thankfully, although a couple of people were wounded. The Taliban have denied responsibility for these attacks, and General Murad thinks that this is the work of the Islamic State militants.
You mentioned rockets. Are these rocket-propelled grenades, or are they different kind of rockets? Since there were so many different locations, what have they said about those devices?
So we're hearing things like they were mortar shells, they could be rocket-propelled grenades. What General Murad said was that two suicide attackers were involved in firing mortar shells to different parts of town, including residential areas of Kabul. And he has said that the police and local security forces have now killed both the suicide attackers.
Now, you mentioned that there's a thought that perhaps the Islamic State militant group is behind this and not the Taliban. This comes at a time when President Ghani has called for a ceasefire during the holiday.
Yes, what the president said was that he offered a 3-month ceasefire, but he made it conditional to the Taliban reciprocating. The Taliban did not make any official announcement about a ceasefire, but what we heard from Taliban sources was that their military commanders on the ground were told by the leadership to cease fighting during the 3 or 4 days that the country was celebrating Eid and everybody was on Eid holidays. We also heard from President Ghani's spokesman, Mr. Haroon Chahan Suri, that the government will not honor any unannounced ceasefire. So as far as we know, there was an offer of ceasefire. The Taliban maybe quietly accepted or acted on it, but not publicly. Therefore, there is no official ceasefire. Still, the Taliban sent a message to the media making it clear that they had nothing to do with these attacks in Kabul. And now we've heard from a senior Afghan official that they suspect that this was the work of Islamic State.
With regards to the Afghanistan government and the Taliban, has any movement gone forward on proposed peace talks?
Yes, there has been movement in the last few months. The last official ceasefire, when both sides announced it and for a few days there was peace in the country, was in June. Again, over Eid al-Fitr, another holy Muslim festival. And what we saw during those couple of days was Taliban fighters came into the cities, women came out to greet them, they took selfies with Afghan security forces, they offered prayers with them, and in interviews to journalists, they admitted that they were tired of fighting, but they also said that they would follow the orders of their leadership. Since then, the Taliban have two big demands. One is that they say they don't want to talk to the government in Kabul, which they call a puppet regime. They say they want to engage directly with the United States, which they call an occupying force. And the second is that they want the United States and the NATO to withdraw all its troops. In one way or the other, the U.S. has indicated that it's willing to negotiate on both demands. So we've heard reports, some in the media, some from Taliban sources, that a U.S. official met with the Taliban political office in Doha. We also have heard from U.S. officials that they're willing to, including from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, that they're willing to negotiate troop withdrawal. And with these two developments, there's a lot of hope in the region that now the Taliban will come to the table.
That's Aisha Tanzim reporting for VOA from Islamabad.
Tuesday, Britain called for the European Union to increase sanctions against Russia, saying the bloc had to stand shoulder to shoulder with the United States, which hit Moscow with new economic curbs this month. Britain is pressing its European allies to stand with the United States and increase sanctions against Russia. In a speech in Washington Tuesday, Britain's foreign minister Jeremy Hunt said that Russian President Vladimir Putin has made the world a more dangerous place. Hunt said that after a chemical weapons attack in England, the EU should apply more pressure to ensure Russia sticks to international rules. Reuters' Scarlett Vitanovich has more.
The U.S. hit Moscow with new economic curbs this month. In an interview with BBC Radio, Hunt said the EU should join President Trump.
What I'm saying is now they're going a step further and doing sanctions. Given that this attack happened on European soil, we must make sure that what we do matches up to that.
Britain, the EU and the US blame Moscow for a nerve agent attack on a former Russian double agent in an English city earlier this year. The Kremlin denies involvement. Citing the incident, the US this month imposed sanctions against Russia covering national security-related goods. It's promised more hard-hitting measures unless Russia gave, quote, reliable assurances it would no longer use chemical weapons. The sanctions sparked a sell-off across Russian markets and pushed up the country's cost of borrowing. While Britain is preparing to leave the EU next year, its sanctions policy is currently determined in Brussels. The EU recently agreed to renew sanctions against Russia relating to its annexation of Crimea, but hasn't imposed any relating to the poisoning. With the EU split in their approach to Russian ties, Hunt's call is unlikely to be answered quickly or at all.
Furthermore, the U.S. is sanctioning two Russian shipping companies suspected of transferring petroleum products to North Korean vessels in violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Among other top stories, the Vatican said on Tuesday that Pope Francis is expected to meet with victims of sexual abuse during his weekend visit to Ireland and speak about the problem. The Trump administration has proposed a major rollback in Obama-era restrictions on climate-changing emissions from coal-fired power plants. The plan announced Tuesday gives states more discretion in choosing how to regulate pollution from plants. Microsoft has uncovered new hacking attempts by Russia targeting U.S. political groups ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. The company said Tuesday that a group tied to the Russian government created fake websites that appeared to spoof two American conservative organizations. For expanded coverage of these stories and more, visit our website or download the VOA mobile application. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
For years, science has linked saturated fats found in red meats to cardiovascular disease. Now, a new study published in the American Heart Association's journal Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology suggests that sensitivity to an allergen found in red meat may also contribute to the buildup of arterial plaque in some people. Previous research identified the main red meat allergen as something called alpha-gal, which is described as a type of complex sugar. They also found that the bite of the Amblyomma americanum, or Lone Star tick, can sensitize people to this allergen. While scientists are unclear of the exact number of people who may have this meat allergy, the study authors estimate that it may be 1% of the population in some areas. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's international edition continues. The White House said that the last Nazi war crime suspect facing deportation from the United States was taken from his New York City home and spirited early Tuesday morning to Germany. VOA's Jeff Custer has that story.
Yakif Pauly is a 95-year-old former concentration camp guard. American broadcaster ABC News was present when Pauly was removed by wheelchair from his home in New York City Monday. Pauly, having grown a white beard, looked frail and lacked front teeth. He didn't answer questions as agents lifted him from a wheelchair onto an ambulance stretcher.
Sir, are you a Nazi? Sir, are you a Nazi? Are you scared about where you're headed next, sir? You have any regrets? Anything you'd like to say?
His deportation came 25 years after investigators first confronted him about his World War II past, and he admitted lying to get into the U.S., claiming he spent the war as a farmer and factory worker. Pauly lived quietly in the U.S. for years as a draftsman and then as a retiree until nearly three decades ago, when investigators found his name on an old Nazi roster and a former fellow guard spilled the secret that he was living somewhere in America. Pauly told Justice Department investigators who showed up at his door in 1993, "I would never have received my visa if I told the truth. Everyone lied." Even though Pauly obtained U.S. citizenship in 1957, a judge stripped it from him in 2003 for participation in acts against Jewish civilians while an armed guard at the Treniki camp in Nazi-occupied Poland, and was ordered deported a year later. However, Germany, Poland, Ukraine, and other countries refused to take him. So he continued living in limbo in the two-story red brick home in Queens he shared with his wife, Maria, who is now 86. His continued presence outraged the Jewish community, attracting frequent protests over the years that featured such chants as, "Your neighbor is a Nazi." According to the U.S. Justice Department, Pauly served at Treniki in 1943. That same year, 6,000 prisoners in the camps and tens of thousands of other prisoners held in occupied Poland were rounded up and slaughtered. Pauly admitted serving in Treniki but denied any involvement in war crimes. Last September, all 29 members of New York's congressional delegation signed a letter urging the State Department to follow through on his deportation, and Ambassador Richard Grenell made it a priority after arriving in Germany earlier this year. The deportation came after weeks of diplomatic negotiations, which the White House said President Donald Trump had supported. The White House said Pauly's removal sends a strong message that the United States will not tolerate those who facilitated Nazi crimes and other human rights violations, and they will not find a safe haven on American soil. It is unclear what, if any, legal proceedings Pauly may face in Germany. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
U.S. law enforcement agencies led by the Federal Bureau of Investigation are searching for a 28-year-old Chinese national identified as Ruochen Tony Liao, who has been missing since July 16th, a victim of an abduction possibly by men who knew him. Liao was last seen emerging from a business meeting in the city of San Gabriel, California, which is east of Los Angeles. His Chinese family is desperate to gain information leading to the safe return of their son. Malcolm Lombard is an attorney representing the family. He spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty.
He went to a business meeting in the San Gabriel Valley. He expected to conduct some business, and he never came back.
He's a car dealer, isn't he?
He is a car dealer. He deals in high-end luxury cars and on a consignment basis and on the second hand of the used cars, of high-end luxury cars.
What can you tell me about the actual abduction? I believe there were three men involved?
Correct. One man who's the person who presented a sketch of, his name is David. The other two, we don't have any idea. If they can find this individual named David, they will find Tony.
There's a relationship there?
Yes. David was at the business meeting.
And the family has offered a $150,000 reward?
Correct. They've offered up to $150,000 reward to safe return the whereabouts of their son.
And the suspects have demanded a ransom.
That is correct. $2 million U.S. dollars.
Do we know any more in the case than what's already been revealed right now? Is the investigation making progress?
After today's news conference, there have been tips coming in from the public, but we're certainly seeking more tips and more information and more inquiry from the public will be helpful.
Matthew, can you tell me about Tony? He was educated here in the U.S. He's a U.S. citizen?
He's not a U.S. citizen. He was educated here. He went to school in Nebraska, and he's lived here in Southern California for about 4 or 5 years. He loves cars. That's really his main passion. He loves being around them. He loves selling cars. He loves helping people obtain the car of their dreams. Everything about cars is he loves.
Is his family also in California?
No, they're not. They are in China. They're terrified. They're distraught. Tony really has no family here in the U.S., and he is just here by his friends. His friends who are here in Southern California, the family is scared as well as devastated. He's their only son.
The kidnappers are all believed to be Chinese. The FBI has released a sketch of one of the suspects named David. It does not believe Liao and his kidnappers have left the U.S. and is offering a $25,000 reward for information leading to his recovery. His kidnappers have not been heard from for about a month, and investigators believe Liao may have been the victim of a business deal gone bad. This is International Edition.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists, win prizes, and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull survived a leadership challenge by Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton on Tuesday. However, the narrow margin of his win did little to dampen speculation about his future as the country's leader. Reuters' Ed Giles reports.
Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull only narrowly clung to his job on Tuesday, surviving a leadership dispute from within his own Liberal Party. The challenge for top office came from his cabinet, Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton. Turnbull only won the vote 48-35.
Today, the Liberal Party room has confirmed my leadership and Julie's deputy leadership of the Liberal Party.
Despite coming out on top, Turnbull's narrow victory did little to stop speculation over his future as Australia's leader and the possibility of an early election. The Liberal Party vote came after Turnbull tried to push through a new climate bill his right-wing opponents didn't like over the past week. He watered it down, but that didn't seem to be enough for his challengers. And a recent poll showed a sharp fall in support for the governing coalition. Australia's due for a federal election by May next year. Some say this week's leadership contest could mean that vote will happen sooner rather than later. Australia's democracy has become renowned for leadership instability, and it's a bipartisan trend. The country has seen six prime ministers since 2009, and none have served a full term. Economists said the country's political instability could be contributing to falling consumer confidence. And on the streets of Sydney, the country's biggest city, people expressed their anger.
I am fed up with politics in Australia. I would like them to start ruling the country, having policies, and stop their infighting.
That was Reuters at Giles. Nearly 2 million pilgrims from around the world are gathering this week near the Muslim holy city of Mecca for the annual Hajj. Worshippers crowd in close quarters, often eating and sleeping outside, which may put them at risk for illness. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports Saudi Arabia's health minister says the kingdom is ready.
The annual Hajj is underway in Saudi Arabia. This year, nearly 2 million Muslims from around the world gather near the holy city of Mecca. The pilgrimage is required at least once in the life of every able-bodied Muslim who can afford the journey. But it's certainly not without health risks, with so many people living so close together out in the elements.
If there is but the smallest doubt that indicates any person might have a specific disease, or if we find that they have not taken some vaccinations, the first thing we do is vaccinate.
Saudi Arabia's health minister says more than 30,000 health professionals working at 25 hospitals are offering free medical services from vaccinations to open-heart surgery.
We make sure that nobody enters with a specific disease, and if they do, we keep them under our watch until they are better, after which they return back to their countries.
Worshippers arrived in Saudi Arabia on Sunday amid heavy storms that sent some ducking for cover in makeshift tents. Civil defense officials warned of possible flooding throughout the night. But weather conditions calmed, and pilgrims resumed this mandatory ritual of Islam.
I was around 27 years old when I came for Umrah. Now I'm 65, towards the end of my days. So for God to will me to come here for such a huge thing, the fact that I'm here is God's will. It's the ultimate joy. But what is most important is that God accepts my Hajj.
The Hajj is one of the world's largest organized events, and it poses logistical challenges for Saudi officials. In the past, there have been deadly stampedes, fires, and riots. Officials say preparations for pilgrim safety this year started months ago. The Hajj ends this Friday night. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And before I go, on this day, a milestone in astronomy. In 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrated his new telescope to a group of officials atop the Campanile in Venice. And in 1959, U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed an executive order making Hawaii the 50th state, hence Hawaii 5-0. And that is going to do it for today's International Edition. Patrice Martin directed the program, and Peter Hunley engineered the broadcast. I'd also like to thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. Now, to keep up with the latest pictures, video stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In July 1995, near the end of the Yugoslav Civil War, Bosnian Serb troops overran the town of Srebrenica, a United Nations-designated protected area packed with tens of thousands of Bosnian Muslims who had sought shelter there. The troops rounded up the population, deported the women and youngest children, and then systematically massacred all males over the age of 15. The 1948 United Nations Genocide Convention defines genocide as acts committed with intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. And that is what happened in Srebrenica, according to a report issued in 2004 by the Commission for Investigation of the Events in and Around Srebrenica. Later that year, the government of Republika Srpska, an autonomous region within Bosnia and Herzegovina, issued an official apology. But on August 14, 2018, the National Assembly of Republika Srpska, headed by ultra-nationalist president Milorad Dodik, rejected the 2004 report, calling it biased and untrue, and claiming that many of the nearly 8,400 victims are still alive. The Republika Srpska government's adoption of the 2004 report on the Srebrenica genocide was an important step in Bosnia and Herzegovina's reconciliation and in facing the difficult facts of the past, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. The August 14 session of the Republika Srpska National Assembly is a step in the wrong direction. Attempts to reject or amend the report on Srebrenica are part of wider efforts to revise the facts of the past war, to deny history, and to politicize tragedy. It is in the interest of the citizens of Republika Srpska to reverse the trend of revering convicted war criminals as heroes and to ensure their crimes continue to be publicly rejected, she said. The United States remains fully committed to assisting authorities in Bosnia and Herzegovina at the state, entity, and cantonal levels to investigate and prosecute individuals responsible for crimes against all ethnic groups. The denial of established facts of prior wars will in no way advance these objectives or assist the country's citizens, she said. the United States continues to firmly support peace, stability, and reconciliation in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.